Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined by my buddy, Pat Corain from Establish the Run, and we are going to talk about this Dynasty Fantasy Football auction that we did. We've chatted about it a little bit on this podcast over the last couple weeks. It's really ruined. Like, quarantine already sucked, Pat, but it's gotten worse as a result of this draft.
Yeah, I had an amazing Monday because of this auction where I was just like constantly refreshing the page and bidding on everyone. I had a bunch of money, felt like I was doing really well, pulling off trades, and then ran out of money, and it's been a rough week since. So I'm with you overall, but it's been a lot of fun. I think I'd really like to do another one of these because I feel like it's been a big learning experience for me. This is the first one.
So we're gonna do another one. Yeah, we're going to do another one. Leone said that he will commission it if we find more people to do it. I think the caveat, of course, is Sean is not invited to do this one.
Sean Siegel. Sean Siegel, who I like reluctantly invited. I actually love being in leagues with Sean because he's a very easy person to trade with, and he's active, and, you know, he's like a great league member, but he always wins. So, you know, that's not necessarily something you want to add to the league. And true to form, he's dominated this auction, I think. Without question, just having an incredible draft. I think there's a couple other guys who've done very well as well, but Sean lived up to his reputation for sure.
So I think let's just go ahead and and put this here. Draft starts, right? I think it was last Sunday, so 6 days ago, Sunday afternoon is when we started it.
Yeah.
And just, you know, Lamar's getting thrown out. Mahomes getting thrown out, Zeke's getting thrown out. Did you set up player values? Were you thinking like, okay, I'm going to just try and buy these rookie picks. I'm going to try and get a bunch of quarterbacks. I'm going to try and compete now. Like, just where, how are you heading into all these players getting thrown out?
So I had set up auction values for every player. I have my rankings, my dynasty rankings that established the run. And I used those, but, for the format. So this is Superflex, Titan, and Premium, Best Ball. So that's obviously going to impact things. But I had just done a startup dynasty draft that was Superflex and Titan Premium. So I'd already updated my rankings for myself for that. And so I just needed to convert them to auction dollars, basically. And then I wanted to, I mean, this rookie draft's great. I want to be invested in this rookie draft. But 11 other people also wanted to be invested in this rookie draft. And so those rookie picks went really, really expensive. The early first round rookie picks right off the board.
Like crazy expensive. And so I bought the 101 for $42 out of a $300 bid. And when it went off, but I actually think compared to how much the other top four rookie picks went, I actually got a bargain on it.
Yeah,
but it's still – so I got, I think, a good price on what I got, and it was still 20 to 15% inflated relative to what another guy would go for. You know what I mean?
Agreed. Yeah, so I had to kind of pivot off that. I was like, I'm not going to be able to get in on this rookie pick madness. Some of the really top guys like McCaffrey, I think, went for 88. Is that right?
Yeah, McCaffrey went for 88. I spent $80 on Mahomes.
Yeah.
Dink and Drewby spent $73 on Lamar. And then Sean gets Kyler for 57 and Deshaun for 50.
I can't believe, like, Kyler for 57 was such a steal. And it didn't hit me until, like, 2 days later how big of a steal it was. And it's, you know, Kyler gives him such flexibility because he's building what ended up being kind of a win now. He's basically building a win now and win later team. But at the time he won Kyler, he didn't know that. But Kyler's so great because you could
be either
doing with him. Yeah, you could be either. There's no bad builds with Kyler Murray.
No bad builds with Kyler Murray. And I think so. If the people want to know why I'm so miserable, it's because I've literally drafted the worst team ever. I will be in last place by 500 points for each of the next three seasons, almost for sure. My three best players are Patrick Mahomes, who I spent $83 of my $300 budget on. You might say, oh, well, Mahomes, super flex, like, maybe that's a slight overpay, but, you know, maybe you could still be competitive. Well, then I spent $42 on Jonathan Taylor. Theoretically, it's the first pick in the rookie draft, probably going to be Jonathan Taylor. Then I spent $19 on Noah Fant, which I thought was great at the time, right? Because that's less than Gesicki. That was less than half of Kittle, $15 cheaper than Kelsey. Well, it turns out, like, all these other – like, Hunter Henry, I think, went for $11.
Hawkinson,
like,
went for $9.
Yeah, so, like, Hawkinson and Fant are, like, the same thing.
Yeah.
So – I'm still thinking Deshaun, by the way. Well, obviously. And so I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm probably not going to compete year one. I got some young guys. I have Mahomes who, like, he's not going to lose. Like, guy could tear his ACL. He'll still be a first round pick in Superflex League. So it doesn't really matter. Then, Pat, you traded 22 of your auction dollars.
$22, yeah.
But not just to one team. Two separate teams, you purchased their entire 2022 rookie draft. So first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth round rookie picks that also include veterans in those drafts. And I started to panic at that time because if I was going to get outflanked on the tanking, that was going to be a disaster for me because it was going to mean that I don't have good players and I also am maybe going to get beaten to the future good players by someone else, which is not a position you want to be in.
Yeah, that has been – that move was like – has kind of put me in the middle in terms of what I'm trying to do because I had won Michael Thomas for, I think, $63. And that kind of – if I felt probably similarly to how you felt about the 101 in that I felt like Thomas was a bargain compared to some of the other elite guys who all went for a lot more than that. But – in retrospect, I think I overpaid because some of the other, like Amari Cooper ended up going for $20, you know, so Mike Evans went for $30. So you're just better off spending that money if those bargains are going to be around later. So, but then with Thomas, I already had Thomas, but I realized I could get an entire class of picks for $22 twice. So I just took that deal. And then I later won Zeke. And so I have this like weird mix of good players who are, you know, probably going to wind down.
You got like good prices though, but like in a weird way where you have an extremely bizarre roster in this league.
The weirdest roster ever, but I'm starting to move it. I think for the most part, I got guys who are going to be pretty easy to trade in season. I did like really stupidly price enforce James Conner and won him.
Yeah. That was, I mean, $14 for DeAndre Swift's backups. Seems not great.
That's not going to be fun. But other than that, I think I got guys who are going to be pretty easy to move. Like I got Matt Ryan for probably a little too much for where the auction was at the time, but not a terrible price. I got Aaron Rodgers for $12, which I think, like, assuming he's not one of the QB injuries and someone else goes down, he'll be very easy to move in season. Zeke will be easy to move. Michael Thomas will be easy to move. So I'm hoping that and frankly, those guys, like Zeke is going to be the Cowboys starting running back in 2021 as well. So once the 2023 class of picks become unlocked as trade assets, I could always move them for those picks as well. So I think I'll be able to recoup or even make a profit on those guys, even though my roster looks real, real, real weird right now.
So what is, I guess let's bring it back even further. What were you thinking with the purchasing of the 2022 picks?
So Davis, you had sort of set the market on a 2021.
Yeah, with an egregious trade, like looking at how much auction dollars are worth right now, this has got to be one of the worst trades I've ever made in fantasy football. Cause I just didn't, I thought with the way that things worked out, I was like, for like 3 days, I was like, oh, no, that was a pretty good trade. Like, that was decent compared to how much the 2020 first are going for. Basically, half of a 2020 first is what I – it was $22 out of $300 that I spent on a 2021 first. Turned out to be an overpay by like 50 to 60%.
Yeah, I think JJ spent $19 later on for a 2020 first. But I think that might have been a little high given where the dollars were at the time too. So – those 2021 were kind of hard to price, but I figured at the time, like, well, if a 2021st is an overpay at 22, then a whole draft class at 22 feels all right. And I also felt like there's a chance that the 2022 draft class is undervalued for the same reason, like I've heard you guys talk about how the 21 draft picks might be overvalued if there's no college season or a truncated one, or if guys like enter the what's the draft called, the one where Josh Gordon went?
This is such a sick storyline. If they cancel college football, what's stopping Travis Etienne, Trevor Lawrence, Chuba Hubbard, what's stopping those guys from being like, you know what, we're out, dude. We're going. And you know what? That means that in competitive dynasty leagues, they're just going to go out there and be in fab bidding.
Yeah, trade for some fab in case Etienne shows up.
Yeah, because you unload the clip. You go 100% of your fab on that dude, and that guy turns into a top. I mean, Chuba Hubbard, if he was in this class, he'd be right there with Swift and Taylor, and would maybe even be a guy that a team would take in the first round. And like, that's such a sick storyline, because like, that is really going to shape things in dynasty leagues if that happens.
And it would really crush the value of the 21 class. And then the other thing that could happen, I think, to the 21 class is that, like, I assume, you know, Alabama is going to have a season, right? This is some.
Yeah, but Liberty University. Exactly. Yeah, like what if the SEC is like, you want a scholarship? All right, we're flying you all to some island in American Samoa, and we're playing SEC games, and that's it. Like, all sorts of super weird stuff like that is in the range of outcomes.
But like, the smaller school guys are much likelier. Any underclassmen not in the SEC or, you know, whatever, are much more likely to stay in school an extra year, I think. Unless like, we have a true best case scenario and the season operates more similarly to the way it would have than we're thinking right now. But there's a chance that the 22 class kind of ends up loaded with a bunch of upperclassmen who didn't come out. The 21 class gets bled in two directions, where you have guys entering the supplemental draft and not declaring. And so the 22 picks could be pretty valuable.
Yeah. So that is very sneaky, where it could be like the double draft, right? The 2022 draft. And if the 2022 draft is the double draft, you're going to own this league, because you tanked it out even harder than I did.
Yeah, although I've been trying to get more 2022 picks, and people seem to have wised up a little bit. I just sent Anthony Miko a trade to try to get his.
Well, we got to give Miko credit. He owned me, like, to a degree of which I've never been owned. Where you do your trade, you trade for the multiple, multiple full 2022 drafts, and I'm like, okay, well, I can't let Karain out tank me, so I got to go get at least one person's. And then I paid 23. Well, you paid 22 just to get it done, because I was like, you know, I just need to get this done. And then Christopher Pacheco, who is in this league, he's like, well, I need the auction dollars, because he's trying to compete right now. And Amico insta sold them back to Pacheco for $20. So he just made $3 in the transaction.
Yeah, he sold you his for 23 and bought Pacheco's for 20 in like a 5-minute span. So I've been trying to get Pacheco's off of Miko since, and you know, he's holding on to him tight.
While we are recording this, Leone has like a couple extra dollars, and just to be a dick, he just bid me up on Tre'Quan Smith, who, like, I have no money left, and I just desperately wanted Tre'Quan Smith, and just very – this league has been – I am mad at everyone. At one point, I've been mad at everyone in this league. I would really encourage all of you out there, if you are just so bored in quarantine, I would really encourage this format, because it gives you something to do. It's not like a snake draft where you just have to wait for people to pick and you can make your pre-draft picks. There's like something you can be doing at all points.
Yeah, although I will say, like, maybe do two at once or do a snake draft at the same time, because like, when I was devoting my full attention to this league is when I blew up my team.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really hard not to bid on guys. The thing I realized after the fact that I just did a terrible job of was adjusting to the current market conditions of the league. So like, I had all my pre-draft values, and I think those pre-draft values were decent. But
yeah,
what happened is that then I continued to bid on my pre-draft values on like Monday afternoon when a ton of money had been sucked out of the auction. And I was like, oh, well, this guy's like $2 less than I would have paid before. That's like, that's a value, but it wasn't a value anymore because, you know, all the early rookie picks went for like 10 bucks more than I had them in my sheet for. And like all this money was out of the auction. So nobody had any dollars to spend. So I should have been only bidding on guys that were like a $4 or $5 value for my pre-auction values at that point in the auction. I think right now it's kind of come around and most of the values are now off the board and dollars aren't worth as much as they were a day ago. So it kind of ebbs and flows. But we saw like, you know, yesterday, late the day before, like all these guys were clearing at insane values. Hollywood Brown went for 13.
Making me sick, dude. It was so bad.
For 10 bucks. Like we just talked about how the early picks were like, I think the 104 went for like 40 bucks or something. And the 201 goes for 10. Hockenson went for 9. Guys that I don't even like necessarily always want to get, but like John Brown went for $1. AJ
$1.
$5. Raheem Mostert went for $5. Brandon Cooks went for $3. Johnny Smith went for $5, who I got. That's like one of the only good values I've gotten. Preston Williams went for $3. Blake Jarwin went for $4. The 205 and the 206 went for $7. I think you got one of those. Tyler Boyd went for $13. Keenan Allen went for $13. Like, it goes on and on. Crowder went for $2. Tariq Cohen went for $2.
John Brown and Nick Boyle went for the same dollar amount in this league?
Yeah. I got Scotty Miller for $2 and John Brown goes for $1. You know, it's like...
No, so, okay. This is the funniest bid of the whole draft, by the way. Is you buying N'Keal Harry for $14 on the first day? I think because so outdone. I paid $6 for Brashad Perryman on the first day because I knew that there would be an advantage to having your roster spots consumed already. So like the more roster spots you had taken care of in the beginning, right, the more you have the ability to adjust as it goes on because you don't have to be as constrained by just having dollars out. Like right. I thought that there was a real advantage in not having dollars out. That is generally true in slow auctions. Like just overall that is true. The reason why it didn't play out as much in this draft though was there weren't really bidding wars on guys. Like you just got, like if you were like, you put your proxy bid up to X amount of dollars, they just went. Like, I don't even think Zeke reset. I think I nominated Zeke and I think you got him at the end of that nomination period without him being reset.
Yeah. And I got him for 44, which was way lower than what I thought he would go for. You know, I think Kamara went for like 54 or something. So yeah, they're just like, what happened, I think, is that there were bidding wars on day one, and then everyone was out of money. And so...
Like, everyone except for Sean was out of money after a day.
After a day. And I think that's, like, what I'm joking sort of about joining two of these at once, but the quarantine boredom, I think, played a real factor here.
I mean, dude, how can you sit there and watch, like, oh, CMC's gone. Oh, Lamar's gone. Oh, Zeke's gone. Like... You're just driving yourself crazy. Like you want to do something.
Yeah. And I mean, I thought that the quarterback market was interesting too, because the quarterbacks, I think they all went for more than I had them penciled out for. I typically with Superflex try to go for like having a high floor as opposed to like chasing more of like the middle class guys where I don't know if there's an elite ceiling there. So I'm kind of more comfortable like thinking the quarterbacks, most of the quarterbacks are worth less than others do. But even like later on in the auction, the quarterbacks are going for
free.
A dollar or two. No, I think some went for free, but like Matt Ryan, Carson Wentz, both of whom I won, I think went for, like I won Matt Ryan at $2 over what I had him pre-draft just because I was like, I'm going to get locked out of quarterback. So, and then at the very end, like Derek Carr went for like $6. I got Aaron Rodgers for 12. So there were some super big values, but.
Yeah, but like, so like Aaron Rodgers went for like $8 less than Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's, yeah. And Tom Brady went for 15 and I got Aaron Rodgers for 12. So there were some values, but I started to get nervous at quarterback, and I just finally like paid the prices, and then like six.
Well, so that's the thing about quarterback in these super flex leagues is you can be like, I'm not going to overpay, whatever, whatever. But then like there is a finite point where like you just get shut out, and then and then what? Because there's just not enough for everyone to have. Like if one guy gets to four, there's not enough for everyone to even have two, right? Because just because people start to hoard them.
And it's best ball, so there's like an advantage actually to having four, you know, compared to three. Whereas like, you know, in regular super flex, you can maybe be putting too much of your draft capital into the quarterback position and you're not getting points out of it. Arguably you are getting points out of it if you bought four quarterbacks, none of whom is elite.
Yeah. So I'm just sitting here looking at my roster and I'm like, man, the 2022 draft class really better be good, because I will say though, I have kind of always wanted to do a dynasty league where I completely did not care about winning the first year. Like not even, and again, far too, I took it to the too extreme, but also in season, if any of my dudes become worth anything, like if any of these $1 guys I drafted finds a role at all, like I'm just insta-trading that guy for a 2023 second round pick or whatever. Like, so there is a little bit of freedom. I don't know. How are you thinking about in-season moves?
I'm thinking similarly. I'm also kind of looking forward to, like, I have Zeke, I have Thomas, and assuming I'm not able to move them, I'm shopping them now, but people aren't that interested. But I think in season, their market will be better.
People are never interested, by the way. This is always true in fantasy. They don't ever want to trade right after the draft.
That's very true.
Yeah, they're like, you look at your team and you're like, my team is awesome. I drafted the perfect team. I got X, Y, and Z. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. And that is you know, that's what you're fighting against right now, trying to trade MT and Zeke.
And that's okay, because MT and Zeke's value is not going to change. And I think it'll go up a little once they start scoring points at ridiculously high rates. Michael Thomas in this league, by the way, because there's yardage bonuses,
he had
27 points per game last year, over 400 PPR points. So, which, like, basically, I think he was like the third or fourth high scoring player in the league. So I'm not concerned about, like, I just need to wait like 2 weeks or whatever. I think there's trading periods in this league, so I might have to wait until like midseason or something. But
yeah, so that is something that's going to be tough for you and I, is we can trade. So after this draft gets done, trading is just open and we can trade anytime until the season starts, but then it is locked during the year except for between weeks 7 and 8. So that's our trading window to be like, Tajay Sharpe, Olabisi Johnson, you know, like if these guys have found a role, you just got to ship them out for whatever you can get.
I think I might be a little bit more popular than you as a trade partner. And we,
I mean, so for those listening, let's just give you a preview. These are the guys I think I might be able to sell in season. I think I might be able to sell Tony Pollard, right? Something happens to Zeke. They use Pollard like a slot wide receiver, whatever, can maybe sell him. The sneaky guy that I might be able to sell before the season is Travion Williams. If this Giovanni Bernard holdout thing is real, which, you know, who knows, whatever, but he would be maybe a sell. And the guy I actually have legit high hopes for selling is Cameron Brait. OJ Howard gets traded, or, you know, Brady's just like, dude, I'm not throwing to OJ Howard. Cameron Brait is, you know, he's where he's supposed to be. He blocks, so on and so forth. Those are the guys I think I can trade.
I think I'll have a role either way, actually. So I could see him being an in-season guy, even if Howard doesn't get traded.
Yeah. Man, just this team is so bad, Pat.
Yeah. I mean,
I love it.
You just hoped you could sell Cameron Brait as a way to salvage your chances. So I don't know.
Dude, 2022 second for Cameron Brait. I mean, that's a slam dunk right now, I think. it is wild how many $1 guys are on this team. Very tough. So I guess we got to talk about what Sean did, right? We got to talk about what Sean did, which was he did actually buy a couple guys right when the auction first opened. He bought Dalvin Cook. He bought Deshaun Watson and he bought Kyler Murray, but he bought all of those guys at a discount to what the other studs at their position were going for. I guess Zeke went for less than him, but
he actually had his pick, because I had bid on, I it's just one of those things where I'm like, Kamara went for like 53 or 54, and Zeke was sitting at 43, and Dalvin was sitting at like 45. And so I bid on both of them, assuming I was like, it was that part in the auction where it just completely slowed down. Didn't even slow down. The bidding just dropped off. It's like what we were talking about before, where all the bidding happened on Sunday, the first day of the auction, and through Monday. And then everyone ran out of money once people started clearing. And so I was looking like I might win both Dalvin and Zeke at pretty good values. And Sean just got to pick which one he preferred because they're basically going for the same price. And so he picked Dalvin.
Which, you know, whatever. I mean, good for him. So Sean has – he's going to have, like, the entire second round of the rookie draft too, by the way, and he's going to have all of them at discounted prices. So he's coming in here the last day and just sweeping these guys up. He has Chris Carson, Dalvin Cook, Justice Hill, Sony Michel. His wife – I will say the part where I think he messed up might be a strong word. I did not understand his plan at wide receiver. I thought he let – some decent values at wide receiver go and has a lot of guys that I do not like very much at wide receiver. Like he has got Hardman, who I really like, but I think he paid a ton for Debo.
But
he got these other guys for like a buck. So, you know, hard to criticize that.
Yeah, I think he – I was talking to him a little bit because we worked out a trade for Carson Wentz. I got a first through a fourth. Splitting the classes. So I think the first and the second are 2021, and then the third and the fourth, I believe, are 2022. So I got that for Carson Wentz. Once I realized, I was like, I don't have any money left. This team's going to be like a half-assed middle of the road team. So I just gotta get more picks. And as I was talking to him, he was commenting on how Anthony had been like doing a really good job of boxing him out of the wide receivers. And since then, Sean's targeted the second round picks. Which I think is sharp because those second round picks are going to be really easy to trade off of on draft day if he wants to. There's also a lot of really good players in that range. There may be some guys who fall, you know, depending on where these quarterbacks end up. So he's going to be able to, I think, recoup the value, make a quick profit on those second round picks, or potentially make huge profits if those guys end up hitting.
Yeah, I mean, so he could do either thing. Is he could go to some of the tanking teams and be like, I'll give you second round pick that can be any player you want, and I'll trade that to you for veteran producer X, mm-hmm. Y, and Z. Or he can just be like, okay, I'm going to take LaVisca Chenault and Lynn Bowden and Darrington Evans and Jordan Love and Jake Fromm, and I'm just going to straight print when one or two of those guys is really good. Right. And, you know, it's going to be – It's very hard to combat the strategy because the main part of his strategy was patience. And
were two and a half patient teams in the whole auction. I'm giving Ben Gretsch half a point. He made it halfway and then he bought all the middle class guys for like good values.
I don't think he wanted to though. So that's the thing is I don't think he wanted to win the guys he won. I think he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar price enforcing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was price enforcing at like solid values. But what ended up happening is then right after he won all those guys, Anthony just took all the rest of them for amazing values.
Well, what happened was, is that the room, I would say like basically the room tightened up in terms of like what a dollar was worth literally as he was doing it. And you know, that's a tough spot to be in.
For sure. For sure. But yeah, I mean, I think most of the values that I listed off before went to Anthony. And then Sean got a bunch of the second round picks and has gotten just some insane, really low values.
Amico, I think, had the strongest draft. So he got both the 112 and the 201. He has four starting quarterbacks, right? So like right there, pretty big advantage. Now that's helped out by the fact that some teams, you know, such as myself, didn't even go for a second, you know, didn't even care about that. He has the whole Chargers backfield. He has Damian and DeAndre Washington in Kansas City, was able to get Keenan Allen, was able to get Tyler Boyd, he got Antonio Brown for a buck. And if Antonio Brown comes back, he's like a $20 player, basically, in fantasy. He got Evan Ingram. He got Darren Waller. He's got Sammy Watkins for like, you know, potential production. He's got Brandon Cooks. Like he's got to be, I think, a big favorite for year one.
For sure. For sure.
Yeah. Very tough scenes for us.
Yeah. And, you know, at least, like, I didn't buy his 2022 draft picks. I feel good about that.
Well, here's the thing. So this is, again, here's the thing. Everyone always feels good about their teams. I just got to capture everyone else's tail risk. I just got to capture the tail risk of other teams just having, like, Antonio Brown quitting the league, but for, you know, Carson Wentz, or, like, I don't even know. I just made a player. But, like, I got to capture the tail risk of other teams, because if things remain in equilibrium, like, I'm never competing until the league resets, basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I did with Sean. I got his first and second round pick, as I mentioned. I think that Sean's team might struggle a little bit in year one, or at least there's that chance that his 2020 team isn't as strong as we're thinking his draft was, because there's a bunch of guys who did go in for this year. When I say struggle, I mean, maybe I end up getting like the 108 or something. His team's going to be good, but he might not be like dominant in 2020, just because there's 3-4 teams that really went hard for this year. I think getting some of their 2022 picks, like I have Leone's 2022 picks, he went really hard.
Yeah.
For year one. Like, sometimes that means your team sucks like 2 years later. So,
right. Yeah,
I don't think, he did a decent job, but there's risk, I think. So that's another reason why those 2022 picks are kind of interesting, because people think like, oh, if I play for this year, my team will also be good 2 years from now. That's not always the case.
I definitely want Ricky's 2022 picks, Ricky Sanders' 2022 picks, and I don't have – do you have them?
I have them.
Yeah, that's – because his team – so Ricky has Christian McCaffrey, he's got Drew Brees, he's got Ben Roethlisberger, he's got Devontae Adams. Like, he is mega geared up to win in year one. And also, when you're geared up to win year one, you take loads of – AARP guys who are no one else wants, but they're going to score points in year one. So guys like Jimmy Graham, guys like Deshaun Watson, even like Cole Beasley, Melvin Gordon, guys like that. Those guys are really not, you're not ever going to be able to trade them for anything like the points that they're scoring, but they are going to score the points. 2022 might get rough for him, and you have all of his picks.
Yeah.
So that's a tough scene for me. I did get outflanked because I have Amico's, and his team is set up to be a little bit better than that.
Yeah, Amico's is set up long-term. I think Sean's is set up well long-term. I haven't looked at Ben's recently, but I think he's set up well long-term too.
The effect that extreme strategies have on a room in an auction, I just always find it fascinating, you know, whether that be like a baseball auction or like a single year fantasy football auction. Because so like in a single year fantasy football auction, everyone has the exact same goals. Maybe you'll have different player evaluations, and, you know, like, oh, you know, we're doing zero RB, or we're punting, we don't want any of the elite wide receivers. We only want cheap wide receivers and we can fill them in, whatever. But as like a dynasty league auction goes on, and this is the first one I've ever done, everyone's goals change. So the prices are just like Julio Jones to Dink's team or Ricky's team or whatever would be worth $20 because they want to score points this year. But like for my team, like I wouldn't even bid $2 on Julio Jones because I'll never ever use his points.
Right. And Julio is like a guy who every day he gets a little harder to trade. So yeah, that's tough. Although I've done like kind of a weird thing where like I got James White for $1. And like at that point I was like, I'm not going to be competing. I know that, but I figured I could probably move James White. I did move James White, I think, for the 401. So not necessarily.
That's what Leone and Drew have been telling me is wrong with my strategy, is that I should have been doing more of that instead of trying to hit the 10 team parlay of Cameron Brate, CJ Uzuma, Olabisi Johnson, and Tajay Sharp turning into something that I can trade for future value, trying to get guys with like minimal present day value and then trading them in season to teams that need it, because it's just more, there's more likely to be a market there. And I don't know if they're right or wrong, but that's what they've been telling me is partly wrong with my strategy.
That's what I was trying to do. I got like Boston Scott, Devonta Freeman, Jamal Williams. Like, no one thinks that those dudes are going to end up being, like, real difference makers ever. But, like, Freeman could sign in Detroit and get, like, more usage than we think he could, you know? Like, for things that they really don't want to use Kerryon. Jamal Williams with, like, an Aaron Jones injury could have, like, a midseason trade value that skyrockets. So that's what I did kind of mix in, like, a guy like Dan Arnold, who's just, like, a lottery ticket, complete lottery ticket, like some of the other guys you mentioned, a Scotty Miller, who's similar that way, too. But, yeah, I mean, I kind of did a little bit of both strategies. But I like sometimes going for the veterans, even in a rebuild, because prices change throughout the year. And people will sometimes overpay in season for vets that are getting production. And if you got them for a dollar, that's, you know, easy to make profit on.
Yeah, I mean, so that is the theory, right? The theory is that if you are just looking to do a future building team, that it doesn't take very much for your $1 player to turn into a $4 player that you can trade for. Maybe you trade him for a younger player. You know, maybe Justice Hill doesn't break out this year. Maybe Mark Ingram is still plugging along. Or maybe it's Gus Edwards, and whoever has Justice Hill decides, like, you know, I actually would rather have a guy who's scoring a little bit of points this year instead of, like, the future Justice Hill value. And then, you know, you get Justice Hill. Also, there was a couple guys who I just couldn't help myself on, one of them being Darwin Thompson. Like, guy, he gets nominated, and I'm immediately like, $4. It's like, it was not even good. I just couldn't help myself. Like, I can't let Darwin Thompson go for a dollar in this auction. I literally couldn't help myself.
I know. I mean, yeah, I bought Hunter Renfrow for $6, which was very kind of you to not mention earlier as one of the worst bids.
I forgot.
Yeah, it was rough. I did see you got Miles Boykin for $4, which I think might have been the slight overpay as well.
Oh, I mean, in the context of day one, two, and three of the auction, I thought $4 for Miles Boykin was crushing. On day 8 of the auction, I'm like, Miles Boykin is a $1 player.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think, like, I hope we do another one of these. One of the things I'll be thinking about in that is that you have to be careful for any players that you have on your sheet is being worth like $5 or less. That
just don't,
they might all be $1 players.
$1 players. And yeah. And it does, and it literally is just a matter of what order they're getting thrown out in. Mm-hmm. Like a guy who is a $5 player who gets thrown out on day one, that guy's probably going to go for $6, $7, because you just are like, what does one extra dollar matter? And then on day 8, you're like doing anything to try and find trades to get like $3 extra.
I was including $4 back in trade offers, and people were like, fuck off.
Yeah. So. I thought that JJ had a really interesting strategy. Well, okay, he messed things up at first, but like by his own admission, he's like, this was not good what I did. He way overpaid for Mark Andrews, but then he found a way to get rid of that. I think he spent $38 on him, but then traded him away with like, and got like a couple extra
that
dollars
AJ
back.
Brown.
Yeah, AJ Brown, and then $3 extra. So, and he reset in the middle of the draft, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, he got Tyreek Hill, and then immediately said, "I've made a mistake. I will sell Tyreek Hill for less than I paid," which I think is pretty admirable, right? Because you're fighting a lot of biases there to not do that.
He saw the room going the direction that it went in, which is all this stuff right now is inflated.
Yep. So he sold off that, and then he said like his original plan was to basically punt, and it was really hard to execute because those rookie picks were so expensive up front. But what he's since done is just pick off a ton of he basically got like most of the picks from 105 through 212. I think he probably has more picks in that range than anyone. Maybe Sean does, but because he has so much of the second round. But he got the 105, 106, 108, 202, 205, 208, 211, and 212. So that's pretty sweet. Like that will be a pretty juicy range of values in this year's draft. So I like what he did there a lot. And then he wasn't really able to get much of the future class. Like I don't think he has any future picks, additional future picks, I should say. So he's really, he went heavy in this year's class, but did it in a pretty savvy way, I think.
So I think a thing that's tilting me right now is I need to trade with Pat Thorman from Establish the Run, because I, with how long it's going to be until my team needs points, I would rather have CeeDee Lamb than Jonathan Taylor. Now, granted, if Jonathan Taylor at the 101, if he turns into Saquon, I will be able to trade him for, you know, anything, right?
Right.
But I kind of like the idea of just like holding Lamb for like 8 years and getting his prime level. But Thorman like doesn't even have a team yet. He's still sitting there sniping off $1 guys. We can't even trade because he only has like 18 roster spots taken up. So it doesn't even work out for me to trade with him yet. Whereas my team is, when this current round of nominations is done tonight, I'm going to be all done.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting that you'd almost rather have Lamb. I think that assuming Taylor ends up in a good location, you'd still rather have Taylor. Like he's one of those, his stock's going to go up and up and up, where I think Lamb's is probably.
So I have the 101, not Jonathan Taylor. Thorman has the 102, the 103, and the 104. I get the issue with doing the trade before the draft is the 101 might decrease in value after the draft. So that's kind of why I would be incentivized. Right. Another problem with doing it before the draft is, say I trade for the 104 for Thorman, and he's just like, you know what? I don't want Joe Burrow. Well, if he doesn't want Joe Burrow, that means I'm not getting Lamb. It means he's going to take Jonathan Taylor, CeeDee Lamb, and DeAndre Swift probably. So I would really want Lamb as opposed to Taylor or as opposed to Judy or opposed to Burrow. That is the keeping the rookie picks in the draft puts Joe Burrow in such a spot, because a lot of the teams like are not going to want to select Burrow. They're going to be building, I have the 103 to take DeAndre Swift. I have the 104 to take Judy, you know, and then all of a sudden you're in a spot where in some of these rookie drafts where the picks are in the pool, Burrow might go like 106 because no one wants him because they had drafted like they were going to be selecting a running back or a wide receiver.
Yeah, I think that has made it interesting to have the picks instead of the players. I would love to know what the individual players went for. And I think having the picks is one of the reasons that they were so expensive, because you can kind of talk yourself into like, well,
this could be anything, you know, yeah. Right? What's in the box? It could be anything, even a boat.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just a very fascinating league. My team is, it's the worst team I've ever drafted. If I don't win the league in 2023, it's going to be a long, hard row. I gotta hope.
Winning the league in 2023 would be quite a turnaround.
you gotta think like that is hitting the first three legs of the parlay, which is Mahomes keeps all of his value, Taylor and or Lamb hit at their 90th degree ceiling, right? Or their 90th percentile ceiling. Like
right.
Taylor becomes Saquon, Lamb becomes Julio Jones, whatever. And Noah Fant is Gronk times, or Jimmy Graham times two, right? Because those are the only three, those are the three good players I have. So though all those three things, I'm basically, my strategy.
But that's basically my team right now, and I have no chance. I mean, I've got Zeke, Michael Thomas, a couple.
So that's only the first three legs of the parlay. Okay. The rest of the parlay is I have to have I have to secure the 101 so no one can out tank me. If I get out tanked, that's horrible, right? Because it seems very unlikely. I gotta admit, it seems very unlikely.
Yeah, you're the 101.
I think that's probably fair. But then I have all these picks. I mean, I think I just counted. I think I have 28 picks. 28 rookie picks in the next two seasons, so 2021, 2022. The problem is, though, you got to pick the players.
Right.
You got to pick, and they have to be good. Like, they can't just be players. They got to be good players that score points, and that's the hard part, and that's like a 15-team parlay.
Yeah, which I kind of like where I'm at a little bit, because let's say I get midseason and the offers just aren't there for Zeke and Thomas. Well, I still have three classes of 2022 picks and two 2021 firsts. So I could always go into the 2021 offseason, still have Zeke. Like, his contract forces him to be the starting running back. Thomas is still in his prime. And I could just go all in at that point and start selling off picks and build around those guys.
Yeah, so you have left yourself some great optionality with enough guys. Like, you have enough guys who are scoring points that you can start to convert those picks into players. I don't even have enough guys to – like, if I was to go start trying trading all these future picks for players right now, I wouldn't even have enough good players to put up goods, like, to get enough points on my roster to win anything.
Yeah. That's why I think, you know, you're set up, I think, really well for, like, 2025, 2026, you know, those.
I mean, so I did the math. Basically, for what I did to be a strategy that makes money. So, like, you know, we do play fantasy football to make money.
Right.
I need to be a favorite to win the league twice in the next 8 years.
I think that's actually doable with how much capital you have.
But that leaves me basically no margin to be bad with the rookie picks or for the rookies to be really bad. Like, what if we get, remember the 2016 rookie class, the Leonard Fournette 101 year? Like, Leonard Fournette, Corey Davis back-to-back, like, those guys just suck. And I, like, if I get stuck with a Leonard Fournette or a Corey Davis in 2022, like, which is fully out of my control, that's a tail risk that's not really being accounted for.
True. Although, I mean, those picks were expensive then. So if you correctly assess that they're not who you want and get off,
yeah, you can trade them.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the math. Is I got to be the favorite twice to win in 8 years, basically. So like 2024, 2025, 2026, assuming that that the world is not over at that point.
Yeah, there's some definite tail risk on that bet.
I am glad to have had a chance to execute the far and away the most extreme strategy I've ever tried to execute. I will never do it again. I will never do anything like this again. I'm more likely to go the other way and trade the picks away and buy olds, though, for sure.
That's, I think, all the more reason why I want to do another one of these, because I could actually see the values being closer to the beginning of the draft, more people pushing in to compete in year one, and it being this like huge advantage to punt, you know, and like,
in, do I have it in me to punt again?
Yeah,
I don't. I definitely, even if it ends up being mathematically viable, I'm going to be the dude out there putting in the $2 bid on Jason Witten just to make sure I lock those points in. Like, I don't think I have it in me to just take the beating of being in last place again. I just think it's too much.
Yeah. I think part of it for me was that it's best ball. And so you're in, there's only trade windows occasionally. So
you don't have to pay attention.
Yeah. You don't have to pay attention.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, I'm in a bunch of these best ball dynasty leagues, and like, I mean, I just don't check the scores, especially because if you have a bad team, like, what's the point?
Right.
All right. Anything else that we wanna cover?
Oh, hopefully we'll get another one of these going soon, man. I'm starting to
pretty sure it's. I mean, it's already in the works. I think we are. So I think it's gonna be me, you, Leone. I think Leone and Drew are gonna team up in this one because they had already talked, like, they were both like, oh well, we talked too much about player values, so it doesn't make any sense for us to compete against each other again. So I think another thing is everyone found the same dynasty values sheets, like on an old Reddit thread. But if you Google search dynasty fantasy football auction values, you find this Reddit thread with like a spreadsheet, and four of us all found the same one and we're using it to compute, which I thought was really funny.
That's interesting. I like scaled a like trade value chart that I have. So I took like basically the shape of the exponential market and scaled it over to dollars.
Well, it led you to James Conner at $14, which I hope you feel good about.
I'll have to get a new chart.
No, dude, you're just gonna run hot. He's gonna get traded to the Buccaneers.
I actually think that Connor could have trade value in season if they don't draft a running back high. Although the rumors are that they will do that, so
right,
I'm probably screwed.
You didn't buy Ronald Jones in this draft. That's how we're going to end it, is that you let Ronald Jones go for $4 to someone else?
I did, and it was because I was completely broke at the time. So patience, you know, it's a virtue.
What are you hoping happens there? What's our prognosis?
I don't see any way they don't draft a running back. I just think it's a lock. But I do think that running back is more likely to be a pass catcher first. Like, that will be their primary skill set. So I think Edwards-Helaire is likely to end up there. I do think, though, that Jones will have some kind of role. The problem is that if he's losing all the pass catching work and not necessarily locking down the goal line work, then he won't be worth it.
And he becomes one of Gretsch's trap guys.
Yeah. He has like a high trap potential. Although he was good in goal line situations last year, he lost like half of that work to Peyton Barber, who's now gone. Perhaps a rookie running back would not be someone to take that away. So
I take it back. Pat, I have the worst price from this draft. Bryce Love for $4. Bryce Love for $4, unilaterally the worst price available in this draft.
I would take Bryce Love over Miles Boykin.
No.
Really?
Maybe you would, but Miles Boykin, like, Bryce Love will be good. Like, he'll be usable for fantasy for maybe a year or two. If Miles Boykin becomes a usable NFL player, it probably means that he is like an 8-touchdown-a-year guy with Lamar Jackson. So, like, his long-term fantasy viability would be way better.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue that Boykin has a higher ceiling, but I think you're going to be able to get off Love at a profit much sooner and a much more
likely. Oh, yeah. I mean, he like, Darius Geis, like, hyperextends his knee for the 18th time. Bryce Love is Washington's week one starting running back. Like, that's a real thing.
Yeah. So I'm sensing I went on about Jones too long, which wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah. All right, man. Hey, everyone, check out Pat's stuff on Establish the Run. We'll probably do more podcasts on this auction. I would really like to have Sean on. So I think,
yeah.
I think I'm going to try and talk to Sean about, you know, how he just owned all of us. So absolutely, completely and totally. And yeah, everyone, thanks for listening. Do one of these with your buddies. It really helps alleviate the boredom.
That's good.
And we will be back soon.